Mrs. Wilson. We go over to that.
In the Prime Minister's presentation of the estimates for 2005-2006, nowhere, Mr. Speaker, sir, nowhere did he inform this Honorable House and the nation at large of the level of unemployment that obtains in the economy. Peruse from page 1 to the terminal, the end of the Social and Economic Review, and nowhere will you find any mention of the level of unemployment in St. Lucia. Mr. Speaker, sir, it is not by accident. This omission is by design. Mr. Speaker, I heard a quotation. I heard a quotation from Longfellow urging us not to return to the shadowy past, the shadowy darkness of the past. I heard the Honorable Prime Minister tell us that the old paradigms were disappearing and new standards and rules were replacing them. And I pondered and I thought, why is the Prime Minister so afraid of us returning to the shadowy past? Where is the change that Labour promised this country? I pondered, Mr. Speaker, sir, and I recognize that it is because of the failure to keep their promises that they are afraid that we shall return to the shadowy past. But, Mr. Speaker, sir, while I pondered, something became abundantly clear, that the more things change, the more they remain the same. Mr. Speaker, every time we are called upon to engage in this perennial exercise, I choose a point of departure from the high constitutional and apolitical source that should symbolize this integrating force for all St. Lucians, namely our Governor General, Her Excellency, Dame Calliope Perlett Luisi. Because I have always found the philosophical underpinnings of Her Majesty's representative's throne speech inspiring. But for years it has been woefully and wistfully ignored by the Honorable Prime Minister in the actual execution of policy. I have come, however, to realize that such is the schizophrenic nature of those that power consume. And therefore, this year, I have made a departure. I have sought guidance from a higher source, the Almighty, to guide me in this, my contribution on the appropriations bill. Mr. Speaker, sir, I prayed sincerely this morning for the will of God to free me so that I could openly expose this budget for what it truly is, and by extension to show fellow St. Lucians the true nature of this government that purported to be in the interest of Le Pep, the Malleway of St. Lucia. Mr. Speaker, sir, do you remember this document? The contract of faith. The contract of faith. Yes, the equivalent of Muhammad Gaddafi's Green Book. That red labor manifesto. That epistle for the assumption to power. Oh, how foolish and gullible we St. Lucians were. How can you have a contract of faith, Mr. Speaker, sir? Faith is a function of belief, which is subjective and as variable as the individual. On the other hand, a contract is a well-defined, unenforceable body. Mr. Speaker, on the one hand, Mr. Speaker, that being so, how could we as a people accept and buy from them a slogan and a document entitled A Contract of Peace? Mr. Speaker, sir, you know why? Because we are gullible. And you know why, Mr. Speaker, sir? Because The expectation and the desire for change was so great in 1997 that we followed the promise of a falling highway from Rosalie to Kingford and a bowling alley. Where is it? Now is the time to come back to reality. You see, Mr. Speaker, from the inception, this government has been living a dangerous lie. Today, in my humble view, this budget seeks to perpetuate this lie, given its over-ambitious list of tourism investment proposals. And note well that the Honourable Prime Minister took time to emphasize proposals. So he placed emphasis on proposed investments. Mr. Speaker, fortunately, a lot of St. Lucians have decided that they will not be fooled again. And because Labour has turned its back on it on their own, that is not likely to happen. I am one who will not be fooled. And that is why I want to refer to this budget as a glitter-coated package containing two levels. The first layer contains cosmetic growth, engined by tourism, government service, banking and insurance, communications and wholesale and retail trade. The second layer is a block of social tension, moral and social decadence, stacked together like sticks of dynamite. Unemployment, discrimination, marginalization, poverty, drugs, crime, waiting to explode. Mr. Speaker, much ado has been made about 3.6% growth for the period under review. The engine areas of growth, Mr. Speaker, must be carefully examined, as must these important questions be answered. Who are the main beneficiaries of such growth? Does such growth redound to the benefit of the vast majority of St. Lucians? Is it properly distributed, or does it filter through to the households? Or does it redound to the benefit of a small elite, a select few, some local, others foreign, but both permanent features that inhere in our societies, perpetuating poverty and underdevelopment? Read Monroe, read Fanon, read Sierra Change, read Beckford, and you will understand. You will understand. Mr. Speaker, let us isolate these engineers of growth to see what they are and who they represent. At page 4 of the Social and Economic Review, Mr. Speaker, sir, they are stated thus. Hotel and restaurants, 5.9%. Wholesale and retail, 7.8%. Communications, 4.6%. Banking and insurance, 4.7%. Government services, 4%. Construction, 0.4%. Now, Mr. Speaker, sir, I want you to ask these questions together with me for the edification, and I want all St. Lucians to ask the questions. Ask any St. Lucian that beneath that veneer of growth, who controls each individual sector that was responsible for the 3.6% growth? Hotels and restaurants. Ask any St. Lucian who this government has sold out to in the hotel industry. Which magnate, Mr. Speaker, and who was working for him who left recently and joined the same industry? All St. Lucians will be able to tell you. And now bitches are coming. Bitches are coming, Mr. Speaker. They have sold out, Mr. Speaker. They have sold out. Who? Hotel and retail, Mr. Speaker, sir. Tell me who has the virtual monopoly in wholesale and retail in St. Lucia after the merger took place between the two leading supermarkets? Ask any St. Lucian. And Mr. Speaker, sir, let me show you the damage that is being caused. Because immediately as that merger came, it's there in the Social and Economic Review, this new entity has gone overseas purchasing cheaper foodstuffs. And what is the consequence of that? You talk You spoke, Honorable Member for Labri, of building the linkages between agriculture and tourism, retail trade and wholesale trade. Let me tell you, Honorable Minister of Agriculture, what the consequence is. Let me tell you what it is. Because of the power and the tendency now to go overseas to purchase cheaper foodstuffs, the farmers are suffering because non-traditional crops declined. Purchases from both hotels and supermarkets declined in the aggregate by 11%. Mr. Speaker, sir, the Social and Economic Review, read, Honourable Member, First Hotel, read! Mr. Speaker, sir, non-traditional crop sales to supermarkets fell by 11% to 1,664.3 tons, while such sales to hotels fell by 2.3% to 915.7 tons. Read! That is the only way you can acquire knowledge. So they have sold out to big business as well. Fourth, communications. The third area of growth, communications. We all know who the recipients, who the beneficiaries are. That is controlled by transnationals. Never mind the Honorable Minister at the time spoke about how slaves, and you remember he incurred the wrath of people by because he has a progressive mentality. But you see, Mr. Speaker, sir, who are the beneficiaries? Cable and wireless, AT&T, Digicel. So you see, I mean, we all know what transnationals do with a percentage of their profits. They repatriate them. Mr. Speaker, sir, let us go again. I expect that the truth will set you free. The truth will set you free. Another area, Mr. Speaker, sir. Banking and insurance.
Mr. Speaker, I rise on a point of order. There are two strangers to the House, gentlemen at the back, who are applauding during debate in this House. I would respectfully ask the Speaker to invite them to leave us so that the business of the House can be properly conducted. The two gentlemen at the back, speakers of this House, for the service.
There was a point of order.
Hold on, honourable member. Harmony of this House is being interfered with, so please be patient, honorable members. May I remind strangers that they are here at our mercy, and only accredited journalists are allowed to make any notes. Honourable Member for Mikunov, please excuse this interruption. Proceed.
I think the interruption was in order, Mr. Speaker, sir. I think it was in order to preserve the peace of this Honourable House, but I think that it could have been dealt with more diplomatically. Mr. Speaker, sir, banking and insurance. Mr. Speaker, the latter one, once mentioned, incurs the wrath and fury of St. Lucia. But Mr. Speaker, sir, banking. We all know how many of our banks are truly indigenous or have a truly development-oriented agenda. Mr. Speaker, all are impelled by a truculent lust for profit. And most of them are indeed transnational corporations that repatriate the same profits. Now, Mr. Speaker, what concerns me is this. Because in this whole liberalized, globalized environment, I don't have a problem with that. But when you look, Mr. Speaker, at the credit lines being offered, and the kind of credit that they offer, Mr. Speaker, you will understand that they are taking this country along a path that is not truly developmental. Because, Mr. Speaker, 48% of the credit line is towards consumer durables. As opposed to, we met 2%. 2%, Mr. Speaker, sir, for agriculture.
What?
2%, Mr. Speaker, for agriculture. Mr. Speaker, so you see the immediate disadvantage. Although contributing 5% to GDP, access to credit by the agricultural sector for investments and working capital continues to be a major issue, as I pointed out, with this commercial act. Then government services, another engine of growth, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, sir, the Honorable Prime Minister spoke clearly about why there was surplus revenue. And I commend, Mr. Speaker, sir, the public servants of this country. But, Mr. Speaker, sir, the growth within that sector rapidly consumes itself, it devours itself because of the expenditure that we have, the recurrent expenditure that is placed, Mr. Speaker, sir, on the wage bill and the payment of other matters like retirement benefits, etc., etc. So you see, Mr. Speaker, sir, so I think the best point that illustrates it, Mr. Speaker, is to look at the sources of financing for the budget. 21%, an improvement, grant funding. 76.8%, loan financing. And revenue, Mr. Speaker, sir, a paltry 2%, $1 million. So you see the effect. Although the public servants are doing what they're supposed to do, there is a combination of factors that neutralizes the effect of that sector as an engine of growth. Mr. Speaker, the Honorable Prime Minister and Minister of Finance made one open admission when he said that his government had presided over the shift in the economy from a predominantly agricultural economy to a service-oriented economy. What a revelation, Mr. Speaker! What a betrayal of the farmers and the blood of Randy and Julius! These were the ones who held strikes and blocked roads, hoping that you will come to the rescue. Remember Patrick Joseph, Abel Wilson, and the Salvation Committee? Were they only pawns in your quest for political power? And then there was the payment of the $43 million payoff for SLBGA debt and the subsequent privatization of the industry. Was that all in vain? So much money spent when you knew all along that you would be making a shift to services instead of agriculture. What a betrayal, Mr. Speaker. What a betrayal. Mr. Speaker, these engine sectors of growth are service sector expansions which have no real distributive impact on the lives of the vast majority of St. Lucians. I have pointed out who the real beneficiaries are, and their relationship have been more subtly redefined to the political directorate in this post-colonial / plantation society of ours. Mr. Speaker, sad to see, labor seem to be the new collaborator perpetuating underdevelopment in a virtual alliance with these interests. Mr. Speaker, you let me further illustrate how cunningly the figures were presented in this year's budget. Let us make a comparative analysis of tourism, the tourism sector, which was the main engine of growth. In other words, I call it the cylinder head of growth. Mr. Speaker, it is true that tourism was responsible for the main in growth because it accounted for or contributed to 13.6% of gross domestic product. No lie. But what we were not told is that for the previous review period, 2004-2005, its contribution to the GDP was 16.6%. So there was actually a real decline in terms of its contribution to GDP by 3%. By 3%. Now, Mr. Speaker, sir, let us go further. Let us go further. Mr. Speaker, they say St. Lucia recorded a 7.7% increase in favorable arrivals as additional visitors came from all its three main markets, source markets. That's the USA, Europe, and the Caribbean. True. But what we are not told is that for the period before, the increase was more dramatic. It was 9.3%. Mr. Speaker, sir, in fact, for this period, there were significant declines in the rates of growth from two of the major source markets. Europe, for the previous period, had actually grown by 17.6%. This time, it only grew by 8.5%. And do you know, Mr. Speaker, the Caribbean also fell. It fell from 6.2%. Mr. Speaker, sir. So I want us to understand, in addition to that, there was also a decline in the regional excursionists from 12,817 to 11,441. Now, these trends must, of course, raise certain concerns within your mind. You need, therefore, to critically analyze why is it that the rate of increase from your traditional sources declined substantially, in the case of Europe, so substantially, it's half. Is it because of your marketing policy failing?
On the point of order, Mr. Speaker, I'd be grateful if the honourable member would tell me his thoughts, because the official statistics that I have do not show these figures, so I'd be grateful if I get the information.
Mr. Speaker, sir, it's obvious that you do not read. I also have the Social and Economic Review for 2003, presented to this House on April 20th, 2004, which details, Mr. Speaker, the increase in tourism for that period from one of the major source markets, Europe, Mr. Speaker, sir. Europe was 17.6% for that period.
What is your source of information?
Mr. Speaker, sir, I have it, the Social and Economic Review, Mr. Speaker, sir. I will show you, Mr. Speaker, sir.
Refer to the necessary source and quote therefrom.
I will show you. There we have it, Mr. Speaker, sir. Page 4 of the Social and Economic Review, 2003, as presented to this Honorable House on April 20th, 2004. Yes, we're making a comparative analysis. That's what I'm doing. Despite competition from regional destinations, the island recorded a 9.3% increase in silver arrivals to an all-time high, as additional visitors came from all of its three main source markets. The United States by 4.3%. Europe, yes, I'm doing a comparative analysis. Yes, you have not understood the argument. Europe, 17.6% last year. This year, it has increased by 8.5%. That is the point. I am saying that one has to look critically and try to determine why is it that you have had a decline in the percentage increase, Mr. Speaker, in your percentage increase. So, Mr. Speaker, sir, they know exactly what I'm talking about. That because you need to critically reanalyze, because although you are contracting and there is an 8.5% increase, your rate is slowing down. So although there are additional visitors coming, the rate at which they're coming has slowed down. And therefore you must go back and critically look at, one, your marketing policy. Two, you may look at your problem of elite. Or three, is it violent crime that is ripping the heart of this society that is causing such kind of slowdown? Face the fact. Mr. Speaker, sir, it is clear that the emphasis of this government on service sector growth is strictly misguided. One would have hoped that men of a more enlightened revolutionary background like yourself, steeped in progressive ideological and historical analysis, would have drawn from the writings of your colleagues to implement programs designed to transform the inequalities of the society that you came to lead. Mr. Speaker, sir, Beckford, for example, tells you that there is no doubt that agriculture should play a fundamental role in the economic development of any country. This regime, however, has left our farmers rudderless and abandoned. Although there is much lip service, the strategic planning and support required by our farmers in the face of the Europe gap requirements as we approach the tariff-only system of 2006 is sadly lacking. Mr. Speaker, advances in technology, be it with tissue culture, irrigation, or the institutional arrangements to tackle plastic of Toka, leaf spot, have been too pedestrian in its implementation. WIPDECO, Mr. Speaker, sir, has recently set a 250-ton benchmark for trading companies, and as a consequence, two domestic companies had to exit the industry. The overall impact on agriculture in general, and bananas in particular by this government, has been devastating. Devastating. And I come from the banana belt. Mr. Speaker, sir, this Labour government has the distinction of seeing banana production slump to its historical lowest over the previous season, a mere 33,000 tons in 2003. In this current review period, Mr. Speaker, sir, they make a loss about a 24.6% growth in exports of bananas. But Mr. Speaker, of what consequence is that when you are still well below your optimum capacity to produce? Of what consequence? These are marginal gains. And we need to direct ourselves seriously in increasing the capacity of our farmers to meet that optimum level of production.
I agree.
Mr. Speaker, sir, the Prime Minister himself alluded to the fact that once upon a time, not too far away, a decade ago in the 1990s, agriculture, Mr. Speaker, sir, accounted for 17% of GDP. 17% of GDP, Mr. Speaker, sir. 17%. He quoted it, Mr. Speaker, sir. He! And today, Mr. Speaker, sir, only 4.5% of GDP. And Mr. Speaker, sir, agriculture by their own figures again this year caused increase in employment by 15%. With the banana industry alone growing by 12% or 9,240 persons in 2004. Yet you ignore it. You ignore it. You see, this government has been totally inconsistent, Mr. Speaker, in its policy towards non-traditional agriculture. Sometime recently, this parliament approved considerable capital for the St. Lucia Marketing Board, which we hope would assume its rightful place as a catalyst for forging greater links between agriculture, tourism, wholesale and retail, and industry.
I will.
At that time, I expressed confidence in the new and youthful leadership of the Marketing Board. But Mr. Speaker, sir, it has been shown that sometimes governments set out with an agenda, but they become derailed. They become derailed by the dictates of those who control industry and commerce, who can easily override the development agenda. And that is what the merger did in this instance. That is what it did. That is what the merger did. It override the true development thrust of this government in trying to build linkages, support the Marketing Board, give it institutional capacity. But then, when the big businessmen come and they merge and they call the shots, they can go overseas and buy cheaper products. So you have your farmers being compromised as a consequence. Mr. Speaker, sir, I have spoken in previous debates of a group of middlemen who import foodstuffs and sell directly to the hotels to the detriment of our farmers. Because of the payment arrangements and the incapacity of our farmers to sell on credit for prolonged periods, you have, as a result of that, Mr. Speaker, people who have never planted a seed are displacing our bona fide farmers from their livelihoods. Is that what a government of compassion will countenance? Mr. Speaker, sir, the government must also intervene in setting clear guidelines for commercial bank credit. As I have said, Mr. Speaker, sir, there is a great disparity. And I am particularly concerned, Mr. Speaker, sir, about the decline in our poultry or livestock area industries. Mr. Speaker, a number of professors have been upon them. Chicken production declined by 28.7% to a mere 644.6 tons, Mr. Speaker, sir. Do you know that the year before that, they produced 904 tons? So you had, that was 11.9% of the 20% domestic market share, which is protected for them. As a consequence, Mr. Speaker, given that decline, they are down now to 7% of the 20% domestic market share. Mr. Speaker, sir, they speak about pork, I heard one of them say pork city and that pork production had increased. That is a lie. Read the Social and Economic Review. Data from official sources tell you that pork has declined by 4.2% to 92.4 tons. So how can you talk about pork city, which does not filter through the system where you record your data and you claim an increase on the basis of something that is neither here nor there? You see, Mr. Speaker, but I want to tell you, you know that there's a domestic market share of 40% for pork, Mr. Minister of Agriculture. 40%. So you see, all the capacities that should be realized in terms of production, be it poultry, be it pork, be it bananas, cannot be achieved because of the lack of support given the agricultural sector by this government. The trail, and we are the banana belts. We are the banana belts, punctuated by the city of Castries. Mr. Speaker, sir, I wish to tell you, Mr. Speaker, why, I want to tell you, I want to ask you why, because, and regarding to you, I heard the Honourable Minister ask for call. I'll tell you why there has been such dramatic decline, because the single most prolific farmer and supporter of farmers in poultry and pork, man who purchased and subsidized other farmers, was deliberately destroyed, his business deliberately undermined and destroyed because he chose to exercise his democratic right to represent his people. And keep quiet, because you know I know, because I've been to court to represent him on certain matters. Mr. Speaker, sir, I want to show you how vindictive this government is. Affirmative action. So if you dare confront them, they will cripple you. Mr. Speaker, sir, I'm not speaking physically. Political. Mr. Speaker, in fisheries too, despite creditable improvements in landings, the general lives of the fishers have not improved. You better go back to View Fork and find out what the fishermen are saying. Because some time ago, they took two of the fisheries vehicles and kept them there because the fish was not being purchased. They are ready now. They are ready to go. Mr. Speaker, we talk of CSME and there being no time for transition. Hear that. The Honorable Prime Minister, a man who entered power, said that this is a government in transition. 2 days stands in the House of Parliament and sees CSME coming. We have no time for transition. But to date, Mr. Speaker, you knew it was coming, but to date our fishers still operate fiberglass pirogues, engaging in pelagic fishing off the banks of St. Lucia without any capacity for storage and overnighting at sea. You see what's going to happen? And they get lost like the one in Anseri. You understand? Because they're not equipped. They don't have the facilities where they have the radios and the compasses and to touch base with the Coast Guard and so on. Mr. Speaker, sir, I tell you, very soon our fishers will become the twi-twi and the sardines to be devoured by the pigeons and Trinidadian sharks that this government likes to swim with. Mr. Speaker, I want to borrow the language of the Honourable Member and my good brother from Labrie, brother man we refer to each other as, when he says, the point is pellucidly clear. The traditional spheres of economic activity, which a vast majority of solutions benefited from, Mr. Speaker, have been ignored by this government over the last period in preference to expansion for the sector area. so that, Mr. Speaker, there was continued closure of plants affecting or besetting manufacturing. Mr. Speaker, sir, do you know the only reason why manufacturing recorded an increase in growth? It's because of two things. One, you see that little marginal increase in bananas from 33,000 tons to 42,000 tons. So correspondingly, we never had to produce boxes to meet that increase. And secondly, food and beverages, because of the brewery and the amount of rum we consume in St. Lucia. That is why. That is why. Let us be frank and honest about it. Well, the electrical items were from the small part, but in the main, you know, from Bounty to Guinness to Peter to Heineken. This is it, Mr. Speaker, sir. Mr. Speaker, sir. Mr. Speaker, sir, central government capital expenditure in the past used to provide jobs, especially on road infrastructural improvements and maintenance. For the last period, it actually fell by 10%. While cost overruns and delays, Mr. Speaker, reduced our highways and our byways to the extent that at one stage, Mr. Speaker, sir, they were calling the Beaufort to Cassidy Highway the abortion road. The abortion road. Mr. Speaker, the fiasco of the NCA, the step on the bubble, the corruption that it attends, it speaks volumes, Mr. Speaker, sir. In fact, I was asked to articulate on behalf of the people who want to know in St. Lucia about this NCA situation. I was asked by a source which I will not disclose to find out how come the Honorable Prime Minister come to this Parliament. We've estimated to approve close to $1 billion. $1 billion. And an entity charging $5 million cannot provide proper stewardship. Mr. Speaker, sir, that came from within. That is from within. Because that is a genuine nationalist wanting to see things go right in St. Lucia. Mr. Speaker, sir, today, in the past, Mr. Speaker, we had work gangs. At least, Mr. Speaker, we had work gangs patching the holes to make roadways passable so that a man who started off doing precisely that kind of work and employing other people in the village can now get the nod to run for the constituency of Miku South against the Honorable Arsene Gyei. But all of that is gone. Today we are paying party hacks high wages to cut roadside grass along roads that are gorged and canyoned. Mr. Speaker, sir, the Honorable Member for Grosley knows for how many years that road leading to my residence was ignored. I dare say that had it not been for the timely intervention of the Honorable Prime Minister, we would not see this repair which started about a week and a half ago. But you know what was amazing, Mr. Speaker? We used to see gangs under the step cutting grass along the sides of the road, and you cannot navigate the road, not even with my tundra. You understand? You see the kind of nonsense that's going on? Mr. Speaker, sir, I am telling you, what a waste. I know that the Honorable Prime Minister wishes to boost construction in the pre-election run with increased investment on tertiary roads. That's in the south. 8.6 million cash is Grosley, 7.3 is close to 18 million increased authority. Mr. Speaker, sir, that overambitious list of tourism property invested proposed, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, for how many years, Mr. Speaker, he has spoken about the Prala Bay development. I would like to see the Prala Bay development come on stream. Oh, you understand what I'm saying, Mr. Speaker? That's in my constituency. It will return to the benefit of my constituency. But Mr. Speaker, Mr. Speaker, you see, I will refrain from using unparliamentary language. N1, 2, and 5, from Prale Bridge to the Trumase Bridge, is controlled by the Honorable Member for Mikuno. N1, 2, and 5. You can check it out. Now, Mr. Speaker, sir, as I was saying, we know that this is what is intended. It is a very ambitious list. It is just like the falling highway and the falling alley. Some will be realized. In fact, my honorable friend gave me a joke when he said he made the point in the budget. He said, I really suspect the honorable prime minister just went surfing the net and came up with this project. But it's because that is all in the camaraderie and goodwill of parliamentary debate. The honorable member for leader of the opposition. Mr. Speaker, I believe that they will be all of what they have all of what they have distilled in this long ambitious list is too little, too late. Because, Mr. Speaker, sir, I have stated that they believe St. Lucians have short memories. Mr. Speaker, sir, this is where we get to the second layer. This is where we get to the second layer of the glitter-coated package, the layer that reveals the social and economic degeneration. Unemployment, poverty, marginalization, discrimination, crime. Mr. Speaker, they like Trevor Monroe. They all like Trevor Monroe. Let me give them some of Trevor Monroe. He posits that for true economic development to proceed with certainty in any country, a social environment favorable to it is absolutely necessary. The Social and Economic Review, Mr. Speaker, for St. Lucia endorses that view, that the impetus for growth, particularly in the tourism sector as the main engine of growth, is the perception that our region is a safe, distinct destination, relatively free from violent uprisings and acts of terrorism. Mr. Speaker, common sense would dictate that economic development requires a highly motivated population with progress-oriented values directed to the development effort, and with social institutions that provide the necessary incentives and rewards. Additionally, development requires a high degree of factor mobility, good governance to organize the collective will of the people, and social stability to engender confidence in the future. Mr. Speaker, concrete social requirements of real development include an educational system designed to promote national consciousness, to improve the quality of labor, and to provide a fuller basis for life for the individual, what the sociologists, like the Honorable Member for the Henry South, would term self-actualization. Mr. Speaker, but I did already, you were not listening, Trevor Monroe. Mr. Speaker, unfortunately, Mr. Speaker, a government that came in with such massive support from the people did not seize the opportunity to implement such a comprehensive social program. Their program of social transformation has been confined to infrastructural material improvements such as footpaths, roads, drains, water. This year is no exception, because 11.7 million is allocated, 3.4 million to ongoing PRF projects, 1 million for the relocation of the Mozik people, and BNTF will receive 5 million for community projects. This is necessary, I agree, Mr. Speaker, but not enough. The ghetto youth still have no work. They still own no land. They have no club structures to engage in. They still have no access to proper health care, so crime, drugs, and guns are the obvious ways to earn a quick buck. I have always maintained, Mr. Speaker, that crime is a disorganized response to a situation of neglect, marginalization, and oppression. In Jamaica now, things have got so bad that the government seeks to institute a new policy of financing community projects in depressed areas in return for the surrender of guns. Mr. Speaker, this country has vast resources of crown lands. I'm giving you a proposal when you become Prime Minister. I honestly believe that instead of step programs, the funds should be used as working capital to create
order.
Be it agriculture or otherwise. Give the young people an arrangement whereby they can own the land eventually. give them an injection of capital to sustain a viable project. Help them with capacity building, educating themselves, and improving their entrepreneurial skills. Give them an opportunity to earn a decent living. Maybe, for example, if they choose to go into non-traditional crops, you give them the land, then you can ensure that the supermarket and the hotels purchase from them. This is the way we are going to build linkage.
Oh.
The agribusiness experiment as proposed does not target the dispossessed. Where will the farmer get the $100,000 to pre-qualify when the banks do not give credit for agricultural programs? Mr. Speaker, the criteria is too strict. Some who may wish to enter may have no previous business experience, yet this government of compassion makes previous business experience a condition precedent to qualify for help. What a betrayal, Mr. Speaker. What a betrayal. Mr. Speaker, there is a direct link to the kind of crime which is escalating in this country and unemployment and marginalization of young males as profiled by Her Excellency. Just check out the state of robberies that have taken place in recent times. I think it serves no useful purpose to promote profiling, as it will further damage our young men who are already marginalized. Mr. Speaker, frankly, I am troubled. I am troubled by a negative sociological trend that I have discerned, emanating from one of the sources or one of the engine rooms of growth. On the one hand, while it generates growth, that sector is proven to have a pathological effect on the family, which is the core of society. Mr. Speaker, I was talking to a medical doctor, and when I drew to her attention that analysis, she says the same is true of Victoria Hospital. But I am there to Dr. Wilson's, and you do not call Dr. Wilson's name in vain. That's your contemporary, that's your schoolmate. You all tried to get him to run against me, and he did not. Mr. Speaker, sir, do you know, and I speak of banking, the structure and hours of work required, Mr. Speaker, sir, is having a very devastating effect. And I speak, on something like, I'm speaking generally for all of the banks. I'm speaking of all of the banks, and I recognize, Mr. Speaker, sir, that what you have to do is simply run a survey. Run a survey to see the level of divorces, of truancy. Of truancy. No, because these are very important considerations. The National Bank of St. Lucia is a pioneer in providing a program which provides support for children of the workers beyond the hours of the normal school hours while the parents remain at work. That is commendable, Mr. Speaker, sir. And I believe that the government, given a lot the amount of profit and the orientation of these businesses in terms of profit, that the government should intervene and legislate for these kinds of programs. Because in the recent past, Mr. Speaker, I have seen young girl, because of a particular situation, arrested with guns, arrested because they are in the ghetto every afternoon taking hashish. I have seen young men from perfectly decent or supposedly decent families just put locks on their head, and their parents are asking why. I have seen, Mr. Speaker, sir, enough time, because they have enough time to go by block X, they are smoking weed in their uniforms all over in the ghettos. Mr. Speaker, sir, if we do not take this thing seriously, unsuspectingly we will be churning out potheads, gun runners, all kinds of pathological young people, and then, you know what, we have to deal with it now, Mr. Speaker. We have to deal with it now. Mr. Speaker, sir, while expanding the scope of social transformation to impact on the minds of the dispossessed. That is, while empowering young people, we need to strengthen the capabilities of our police force. Because you see, crime is the single most important social evil that we threaten. We are pretending that World Cup 2007 is going to be a fait accompli. We need to deal with it in a strategic way, Mr. Speaker, sir. Mr. Speaker, sir, we need to strengthen the capabilities of our police force and to revisit their levels of motivation. Mr. Speaker, this government spent $50 million on a prison to house inmates. But Central Police Station, the first normal contact that you have with the police, is no better, and I say that without any reservation, is no better than a pig pen. Mr. Speaker, sir.
The Honourable Member has 15 minutes remaining to make his contribution.
Mr. Speaker, I rise to invoke Order 3210 to allow the Honourable Member from Meeko North an additional 45 minutes within which to complete his presentation.
Honourable Members, the question is that the Honourable Member for Meeko North be allowed an extra 30 minutes and that Standing Order 3210 be waived. 45 minutes? 45 minutes, Honourable Members. As many are of that opinion, say aye.
Aye.
As many are of a contrary opinion, say no. I think the eyes have it. The eyes have it.
No, I expected that from the Honourable Member for Denry South, because he believes, because I have a football team, he believes I'm coming to challenge him. Mr. Speaker, thank you, Honourable Members. Mr. Speaker, the CID and Major Crimes Unit, Mr. Speaker, just had to be evacuated from their location at Fritz Street, given the unsafe nature of the building. Lakai Police Station is crying out for attention, as is the Denry Police Station. And you know, Denry is the home of the Commissioner of Police, as it is the home of the Assistant Commissioner of Police in charge of training. Mr. Speaker, sir, yes, Meeko Police Station is a dump. As a matter of fact, the last time it had any kind of infrastructural improvement on it, it was done by me long before I came into this Honourable House. Mr. Speaker, sir, the drug squad too, Mr. Speaker, take a drive up there to the drug squad and you'll see the conditions. You will see the conditions under which, Mr. Speaker, the police operate. Mr. Speaker, the police must risk their lives and engage criminals who normally are armed. But do you know that these days, those of the police officers in the normal conduct of their duty, those who bear arms at the end of the working shift, are asked to return the arms. So you're a police officer between 8 and when you knock off, whatever your time your shift. So you run behind criminals, contacting criminals with guns, but when you go home, you are defenseless. And you must pass the same ghetto areas to go to your home that you went to raid. Mr. Speaker, that is the reality. I speak the truth. And I hear, Mr. Speaker, that no longer are the police officers guaranteed legal representation, because when they are cross-charged, before, Mr. Speaker, the Attorney General's Chambers of the Ministry of Home Affairs used to have, I once served in that capacity as attorney for the police in cross complaints. Today they have been removed. So the police must fend for themselves, although whatever happened in the execution of their duty. That is absolute nonsense, Mr. Speaker. These are the men and women you want to protect and serve. Mr. Speaker, the forensic unit had two vans. One van was burnt in the graveyard. You remember that. Now you have one and a half. Mr. Speaker, they are empty shells. They have no shells to carry supplies. Mr. Speaker, one of these vans had a broken windscreen. Officers were being transported to court. And you know, officers being impeccably clad, because the police, good police officers, when they go to court, they clad themselves to be two representatives of the form that they should represent. And there came a downpour. So you knew what the result was, Mr. Speaker, sir. Do you know, Mr. Speaker, sir, that on account of such mishap, the officers put in writing the complaints, and you know what was the result? Not only were they transferred from specialized departments that they had just been trained within, they were taken out of this department completely and transferred to outstation. That is the kind of concern you have for your force. Mr. Speaker, sir, let us take a look at some of the allocations in the Home Affairs Ministry. These are some loosely defined categories to illustrate the lack of prioritization for the police, for the Home Affairs Ministry. Take the heads of training, that's 108, tools and instruments, 114, and rewards, compensation, and incentives, 125. These are very serious areas. Training, tools and instruments, rewards, compensations, and incentives. Collectively, these three major heads will receive $791,366. Compare that with certain areas on the other head. Travel and subsistence, 105. Hosting and entertainment, head 106. Professional and professional consultancy and services, 132. Miscellaneous, 139. These four seemingly unnecessary areas, in the aggregate, will receive $1,356,961. Meaning that it exceeds the first three important heads by over $600,000. Mr. Speaker, I advocate a radical change in that kind of scant regard for the welfare of the police. I see that the $4.7 million is allocated under the capital estimate. I hope that it will usher in the forensic laboratory that was promised by Dexter. Sorry, Mr. Speaker, that was promised something ago. Mr. Speaker, sir, I, in the meantime, would like to suggest that the Honorable Prime Minister seek immediate international help to commission the construction of a comprehensive police headquarters, which should also herald the decommissioning of the old police headquarters and central police station once and for all. There's grant aid available for that. There's grant aid. All you have to do is source it. I wish also to advise that the new system of promotion by application and exam is demotivating and should be revisited while providing new incentives to police officers that have given a certain number of years or a certain kind of quality of service. For example, the Honourable Member spoke about the credit union base of the Royal St. Lucia Police Force. I believe, in the same way, Mr. Speaker, that there was some scheme in the previous budgetary period to match grant funds with loans that we can put in place for the police through their own credit union, where they can attract special interest rates at this level, Mr. Speaker, sir. A housing plan, so police officers can acquire a home for their families. Mr. Speaker, Nicholson, you're in charge of your security. Mr. Speaker, sir, I also wish to recommend that special duty-free concessions on vehicles be also considered where their duties include traveling, be it on prosecution, business, or otherwise. Mr. Speaker, what I suggest there is a simultaneous policy of transforming the psyche of the ghetto and of humanizing the police, thus bringing them closer to the philosophy of community policing. Mr. Speaker, I am deeply saddened by the Honorable Prime Minister's announcement that the bursary program will be discontinued at secondary school level, and that a rental scheme targeting only one-third of students from forms 1 to 3 will replace it. That, Mr. Speaker, is a total betrayal in my view of poor people. You can see that Brother George has met his terrestrial demise. Mr. Speaker, you remember Brother George who went to the Chinese and who got the $1 million? And Mr. Speaker, you know how passionately, you remember how passionately he struggled for the people of St. Lucia? Mr. Speaker, sir, I know. What am I trying to do, honorable member from Miss Hotel South? You will understand. You will understand because you will give the best of your year. And you will give your best of your year. And I hope they will appreciate it. Mr. Speaker, I challenge Brother John, his brother, and all honorable members committed in the cause of poor people to ask the honorable Prime Minister to reverse that decision. Where is the philosophy of compassion that you preach? Mr. Speaker, 25 bursaries a year was hardly enough. So many requests were for comments. If they can't buy the books, how in God's name? Mr. Speaker, how in God's name, if they cannot buy the books, how will they be able to rent it? Rental is a continuing obligation. This government has disappointed poor people. As a parliamentary representative, I never gave my supporters this bursary. You know what I did, Mr. Speaker, sir? I took the bursaries and I brought them to the schools within my constituency. And I said to the principals and the staff, I want you to look at the persons in need, but those also who show some promise and merit. So in other words, Mr. Speaker, sir, you give people the drive, those who have indicated a preparedness. And do you know, Mr. Speaker, that is why, Mr. Speaker, I am wounded because of the corruption that obtains in MCA. Because when the buses were not enough, I would be able to draw on the STEP program and get, I've always said that, and get employment for some of the mothers and fathers so that they could help themselves. They could help themselves, Mr. Speaker. So you see, Mr. Speaker, I want to ask the Honorable Prime Minister and Minister of Finance, I'm happy that he returned it to the primary school level. But I am saying, Mr. Speaker, there's a lot of poverty. You know how many good children, brilliant children, have gotten an opportunity? Because without education, a lot of us would not be what we are today. So we need to give an opportunity to the dispossessed children of this country. And I would ask the Honorable Prime Minister and Minister of Finance to revisit it. Mr. Speaker, the issue for me is the turning point in this speech. Incentives for agriculture, which is WTO and CSME compliant, will not reach the persons in dire need of employment. The dispossessed and the marginalized who voted labor to free the shackles of a decadent flabbergasted in 1997 are sadly and woefully betrayed. Mr. Speaker, sir, in the same way, and the Honorable Prime Minister spoke about putting a committee in place before it reaches cabinet to screen these agri projects and so on, agri business projects. There's a history in St. Lucia when you deal with people, boards like that, NDC, or committees like that. They steal your ideas. Or, you know what they do? Because you're from a different political ilk or persuasion, they suppress you. But this is the philosophy of affirmative action as laid down in the resolution in Babuno after the first convention. And you see, Mr. Speaker, I was astounded, Mr. Speaker, when I heard the Honorable Prime Minister say, when the time came for the allocation to the various constituencies, that even opposition members make requests to, as if we are not elected by the people, that as if we do not have legitimate needs for our people. So, Mr. Speaker, that statement reveals how extremely partisan this government is. I suppose it is all a function of absolute power to reduce the adversaries to a state of mendicancy. Well, I am not a beggar. You can do nothing to the people of Nikunov that they have not already endured in times past and times present. Mr. Speaker, they are an extremely proud, industrious and independent people. I know I will get my job at this Hill Road because it goes to the city, this project, it goes to tender in the next 2 weeks. What the Honorable Member who preceded me could not achieve from 20 years, I will achieve it. The Honorable Member who preceded me, frankly, I am not fooled by this budget, Mr. Speaker, sir. I want to remind them, however, that history has a peculiar way of changing the boot to another foot. This budget is geared towards continuing growth that will benefit only its electorate. And I've told you who that electorate is. It ignores the banana belt, agriculture, fishers, and the vast majority of dispossessed people. It recites an overambitious list of property investments and hopes that considerable capital expenditure in roadworks, the wharf, the airport, will cause St. Lucians to see a burst of activity and forget the neglect of the past. Mr. Speaker, I do not believe that St. Lucians will be fooled again. No comprehensive plan is detailed to tackle crime or to motivate the security forces. This situation will only fester. World Cup 2007 is not a magical one. It can easily bring us global embarrassment and destruction of the same tourism industry that was given so much precedence over agriculture. Obviously, the lessons of 9/11 have not been learned, because a simple incident can derail you. Honestly, Mr. Speaker, I think this government must go back to the drawing board. They have turned their backs on the people and embraced the same class of people who the masses sought liberation from. Elections are coming, and I know that they will pay the price. The people will not spare them. They will be defeated overwhelmingly. I will be there to witness the people who get even, when they get even with labor. In closing, I want to address the ordinary, dispossessed, marginalized, unemployed, poor people of this country. Look around you now and learn your lesson well. Be cautious in who you embrace as your savior, for they may very well prove to be the one to betray you. Too often you have been suspicious of leaders from within your rank and file. The oppressors always try to snare the grassroots leaders. I want you to remember that. Stay close to your own, because those who have not shed your hunger and pain cannot feel the fire in your soul. Stop killing each other and taking lives senselessly. True power is in organizations. It must start from within you. Prepare, for soon decisions will be taken concerning your welfare and destiny. I agree with the Honorable Prime Minister. We are not going back to the past. Once he calls the elections, his regime will be the past. Let us start a new beginning. In conclusion, Mr. Speaker, I have been saving the best for last. This government is in trouble, not only because its engine growth does not filter the fruits of the produce to the vast majority of St. Lucians, but more importantly, because of the heavy emphasis on loan financing, they have breached all the prudential benchmarks articulated by the Eastern Caribbean Central Bank. Borrow, borrow, borrow. You must pay back one day, otherwise you are mortgaging your children's children yet born. Mr. Speaker, because of such unchecked borrowing, we need to examine the four prudential benchmark percentages or ratios set by the ECCB. If you fail to comply, then your management is wanting. That is why they have set them as benchmarks. First, Mr. Speaker, sir, central government debt to gross domestic product is set by the ECCB at 60%. That's the prudential debt. At the end of December 2004, we had exceeded it by 9.6%, for it currently stands at 69.6%. Number two, central government debt service to current revenue ratio is set at the prudential mark of 15% by the ECCB. Mr. Speaker, although they sought to lower it by taking advantage of lower interest rates in debt refinancing, this ratio still stands now at 19.7%, a full 4.7% outside the prudential 15% benchmark. Three, the current account balance to GDP must be greater than 4%, as set out by the ECCB. Again, Mr. Speaker, sir, this is an indictment of the fiscal operations because for the period it stood at 3.33%, well below the 4% benchmark. Four, Mr. Speaker, sir. The overall balance to GDP as set by the ECB must be less than minus 3%. Again, Mr. Speaker, the fiscal management is found wanting, as such overall balance to GDP currently stands at minus 4.47%. You see, they believe that we're all monkeys with no background in economics. Tell me, Mr. Speaker, as all four ECB benchmarks have been violated, and with loan financing currently at 76.8% of the budget, with grant financing at a paltry 21%, and revenue at an unspeakable 2% at $1 million, it is obvious that we will continue to bring ourselves and this country in continued debt. Uneasy is the crown, the head that holds the crown. Mr. Speaker, never mind all the long over-ambitious list of proposed investments. I will tell you to tell them like Kakar, they're taking too long to come. That is all bluff. I guess they believe that they will be gone when payback time comes around. But I am confident, Mr. Speaker, sir. I am confident that payback time is soon. And the people of St. Lucia will make them pay. We have had enough hard labor. I thank you, Mr. Speaker.